You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. And a very good Thursday morning to you. Mike McNamara in for Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the home for All Marine Radio, and that would be the All Warrior Radio Network. So hope you're having a good Thursday wherever you are. Normally on the front side of a 3-day weekend, most people are pretty excited. So 3-day weekend for the nation. So a lot of people, a lot of kids getting out of school. And the Memorial Day weekend often marks the start of the summer. So so that going on. So I'm sure most people are excited to have an extra day off this weekend. And so everybody ought to be in a relatively good mood. In the news this morning, 8 have been detained in connection with the Manchester bombing, which I have to tell you, I cast a jaundiced eye at that, okay? And let me tell you why. The people that do this stuff are no strangers to the aftermath of it. So who is going to be left around with cell phones, with email traces, some other kind of communication that's done? Who are those going to be, the principals? Only if they're stupid. My experience with these guys, in specifically in more in Iraq than Afghanistan, is the guys who plan, they're not stupid guys. They've done this. There's a reason they're still alive, and that is because they're pretty good at staying one move ahead of what's going to happen. And I don't mean the guy who blew himself up, you know, whatever, right? But it's all the other people that are in that circle. They know what's going to happen. So who would they roll up? Other blockheads. So it'll be interesting to see, as this investigation goes on, who they ultimately net in this. Because, as I said, the people that planned this, whoever would make that bomb, unless he went to Libya, got instructions on how to make it, and then went back to England and made it, which is entirely possible, then he did it on his own. So, and they supplied the training and whatnot. So, and then what he did is, the way he collected metal was he bought, went to a number of different places buying stuff under the limit. So he didn't raise anybody's, red flag by trying to buy more. He just bought multiple times and therefore got the metal that he needed. So anyway, So we'll, again, I'm just curious because, like I said, this war on terror has been going on for a long time. And one of the things I was musing about yesterday was, I don't think that these guys should be treated like criminals. Because if you don't think there's a global war on terror going, then explain to somebody why the United States fights on the ground in 5 nations right now on a regular basis. Libya, Somalia, Yemen, Iraq, Syria, and Afghanistan. Iraq, Syria will count as 1. We won't even count those as 2. If you count them as 2, there's 6. Hello. So is that your basic global war on terror? Well, I don't know. You can call it what you want. Now, when you're at war and you have people that affiliate themselves with your enemy, then what are they? Are they criminals? No. They're enemy combatants. And they're not dealt with under the civil laws of the nation. They're dealt with in a different way. So I think the nation needs to come to that. That these people lose their civil rights and they're recategorized as enemy combatants. And they're treated accordingly. So when do you cross that? When do you cross that threshold? Next good question. Because God forbid we violate anybody's civil rights. Okay, so let me. I gave this some thought last night, so hear me out. So if they're criminals, then what we would hope is somehow or other our criminal apparatus detects them and then apprehends them on their way to do criminal stuff. Okay. All right, so suppose they don't commit a traffic violation on their way to blow this bomb up. Then what? Then you have the bomb being detonated. What about the civil rights that you're sworn to protect of, in England, 22 people that are now dead? All they did was go to a concert. Do they not have a right? So I think when you're at war, I think you have to aggressively look for the people that would identify themselves with Nazi Germany. Now, it's so much easier when you say Nazi Germany, because then we don't get into the whole Islamophobe thing and blah, 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 okay? Because everybody hates the Nazis, right? All right, so if I got on the Internet and I was looking at Nazi websites, and then I contacted people affiliated with the Nazis and said, hey, I'm interested. What would we say to that? You look his ass up, right? He has expressed interest in aiding and abetting our enemy. So what does that make him? It makes him he's no longer a citizen. He's now an enemy combatant. He's affiliated with them. And that line is a very thick line, but it is what it is. So anyway, we have to kind of get comfortable with that. And we should have, and again, that would be the legal foundation for detaining these people. Okay? You contacted these people. We have the communication between your computer and their computer. This is the conversation. You've now identified with them. You are done. Otherwise, I mean, how do you get on a watch list? You know, I mean, so anyway, all right, we're going to take a break. President is headed for, we're not taking a break yet. President's headed for Brussels to meet with NATO. They're awaiting his arrival now. And so he'll do his thing there, which by all accounts ought to be a positive event. Today here on All Marine Radio, you're going to meet Lieutenant Colonel Ty Edwards. He retired Marine. Ty was in Kunar province of Afghanistan, I think in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, was shot in the head. Shot in the head right through his helmet and suffered a traumatic brain injury. So he's going to join us, and we're going to hear his story. And then hopefully at about 8:30, Robert Nielsen, you all know him, is going to join us, and we'll get an update on from Nielsen. It is Transition Thursday. And then the governor's going to join us, or at least it's scheduled to. So with all of that said, the United States Marine Corps Band makes it official this morning. Ty Edwards going to join us next, so stand by. We'll be right back. Moto now.
Country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Remember, as long as it's politically feasible. That's what he forgot. That's what Ted Sorensen forgot to include in that speech line. Ah, now it makes sense to me, Matt. I guess on a daily basis, that's kind of like a kaleidoscope into my soul, that quote. How cynical I am. And then I have Junior Walker and the All-Stars soothing me, telling me that, like, Mac, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay, man. It is going to be okay. All right, we're going to check the weather here. My weather's jumbled today. I don't know why. But we'll check it anyway. I'll unjumble it for you because I know the order that everybody expects it in. Currently cloudy and 63 in Quantico. Camp Lejeune, partly sunny, 75. Granbury, Texas, partly sunny and 71. Big Timber, Montana, home of Montana Man. Raining and 43 up there. Woo! Camp Smith, dark, cloudy, and 70. Okinawa, dark, cloudy, 76. And at the home of All Marine Radio, cloudy and 60 degrees. That's right. My computer's being slow. I don't know why. It is. It was doing this yesterday, too. I just had to clean my computer out. And I know I'm being late for Ty Edwards. He'll understand them. He remembered a class I taught him. Yeah. On our way to a high of only 68 today. What's that about? All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Ty Edwards joins us here on a Thursday edition before Memorial Day weekend, this hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug. So, here you have it. Battle Mug. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve Enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. /7:24 here on the West Coast. Tracy Lawrence, singing a little country music. Can't Break It to My Heart. And there's a reason, country music, they like that stuff in Mississippi. My next guest, born in Mississippi. They're not like the rest of us. Mississippi, Louisiana, they're a little bit different. Says he was raised in Florida, but we'll get to the bottom of that. Ty Edwards, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired, joins us. Ty, what's up? How are you?
How are you, Mac? Thanks for having me.
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. All right, so born in Mississippi. We already talked about that a little bit, but tell everybody. You're born there but raised in Florida, yes?
Yes. My dad was from Mississippi and my mom was from Florida, so about third grade we moved to a little town in North Florida called Blountstown in the Panhandle.
Right.
So it wasn't that much different from Mississippi where we lived.
Whoa. The people of Florida are not gonna like that, okay? So you might wanna be careful where you say that, all right?
But I mean we refer to it as LA, Lower Alabama. So I mean the part of Florida I'm from.
You know what? I can't tell you,
we live in Tampa now, but I've only, met six people that were born and raised in Tampa. So everybody's from somewhere else.
In Tampa, yeah, all those carpetbaggers. No, you know what? Speaking of Lower Alabama, the guys, I have friends now that live in Lower Alabama. I didn't realize Lower Alabama is in the Central Time Zone. I was like, there's no way. How the hell could that be? And then I had to get out Google Earth, and I had to look at how far west that the panhandle of Florida stretches. And I was, I learned something, I have to tell you.
Yeah, the town we're from is right on the Apalachicola River, and that's the dividing line between the Central and Eastern time zone.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to do a quick geography lesson here. All right, so if you get out Google Earth and from Florida's western border, okay, to Louisiana, for God's sakes, okay, and I'll just pick New Orleans. From that, the western border of Florida to New Orleans is 168 miles. That's how far west, and you don't realize that. You think, you know, New Orleans, that's where the Mississippi River empties, right? That's the middle of the country geographically, kind of, and yet Florida's only 160 miles from that. So, I just learned that recently. So, anyway, my education about L.A., Lower Alabama. I thought all these years it meant Los Angeles.
But the town where we're from in Mississippi was Brandon. That's where I was born. But that's also the home of General Lew Wilson, the Marine Corps Commandant and the Medal of Honor winner.
He's a badass, Lew Wilson, man.
Yeah, I know. My dad's high school teacher was his sister.
Oh, really? Was she a badass?
Yeah. Well, she told my dad if he ever got into college, he wouldn't graduate. So my dad likes to tell that story. But
so wait. So tell the rest of the story. Did he get in college?
Yeah, he made the dean's list his first semester, and he took her the report card. So.
She must have been pissed, huh?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, hey, do you remember a lieutenant by the name of Rob Schwarz from 1-7?
Yeah, I do indeed, and he's been on your show a couple of times.
Yeah, was he a shitbird?
He wasn't a shitbird, but, I mean, yeah.
He was marginal? Is that what you remember?
I can't say marginal, but he was about the average.
He was about average? All right. He must have got better because when I served with him in Iraq, I hate to say this for publication, but he was pretty good. So just so everybody knows, Ty got shot in the head in Afghanistan in what year, 2008 or 2009?
2008, October 2008.
Okay, so now I want everybody to focus on this. Okay, so Ty, you remember the class I taught you in like 1993 in 29 Palms, right?
Yes.
All right, and was even though you've been shot in the head, that was a good class, yes?
Yes.
And then you also remember that Schwarz was kind of a shitbird, right?
Well, I mean, it was good at that.
So even though you've been through everything you remember those two things. I just want to point that out before we get going too far.
But that's the amazing thing. I mean, my memory isn't too affected.
Don't play that card with me.
Anything Marine Corps, strikes a nerve with me, so I mean.
All right. I'll let you off the hook with that then. I will let you off the hook with that. So we're gonna learn about you here a little bit. So you're born and raised in, you're born in Mississippi. You get raised in Florida. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
Well, when I was about in seventh grade, I saw the movie The Green Berets. So I initially wanted to be a Green Beret, but my dad owned a hardware store in Bruntown, and he brought some books home one time. A former Marine had written them, name of Major Gene Duncan.
Okay.
And green side out, brown side out, running circles, screaming, shout.
Right.
And are you familiar with them?
Of course, man. Come on.
So I read the books over Christmas break, and I loved them. And right after Christmas, Major Duncan had a shop right next to my dad's store where he printed the books, and I went over there and that's how it all got started.
So you went over there and you just shot the shit with him about the Marine Corps?
Yeah, and I mean I was so what struck me was his overall love for the Marine Corps and just the camaraderie and brotherhood and things like that. So, So, besides my dad, he's probably the biggest influence on my life that I've had.
Well, I'll tell you what, those books were before the days of Terminal Lance. That was green side out, brown side out. That was like the stupid humor of the Marine Corps, the twisted logic of the Marine Corps, right?
Exactly.
Right.
But if it hadn't have been for him, I mean, I probably wouldn't be in the Marine Corps.
All right. Now, was your dad in the military?
Well, he was in the National Guard back when they had the draft in the early 60s.
Right.
So everybody had to do their time in the service. But, my wife's, my mother's dad was killed, in World War II. So she, never got to meet her dad, but,
wow.
He was a grunt. But, that wasn't on my radar before I met Matt Major Duncan.
All right. My guest this morning is Lieutenant Colonel Ty Edwards, United States Marine Corps Infantry Officer, now retired, living in the Tampa area, and we're talking about his career. And so you where'd you go to college?
Auburn.
Auburn. How about my Crimson Tide?
I'm just waiting for Nick Saban to retire, but it doesn't look like he's going to anytime soon.
He's making too much money, man. He makes more money than anybody in the state in Alabama.
I know, man. It's crazy.
Yeah,
JD Harrell was a year behind me.
Oh, really? I was with JD in Ramadi in 2004, and then in Afghanistan in 2010-11. He's an awesome dude, man. JD Harrell, he's a man.
Yeah. He's awesome. But as a matter of fact, when you were company commander in the 3rd LAR, did you have a guy named Dan Hicks as one of your platoon commanders?
He was. Danny's one of my boys.
Yeah.
He's an Auburn man.
Yeah, exactly.
He's an Auburn man. It's a land-grant school, just so you know.
Right.
Yeah, I learned all the – come on, you know how it is. You're sitting in the middle of nowhere doing nothing, and then I have to start listening to Auburn talk. Oh, my God. So, yeah, I learned all about it. Anyway, I'm not an Alabama fan, just so you know, Ty. I'm a Notre Dame fan, so we're taking our lumps like everybody else. At least you had your big moment. Auburn had their big moment when you returned that field goal and whooped it on Alabama. That bit of craziness.
I know, but it's like once in every 10 years.
No, you're right. I'm with you. Alabama, pretty good. Talk to me. So you graduate from Auburn. Were you PLC? Were you OCC?
I actually was Marine Ops in ROTC.
Okay. All right. So that means you probably did PLC, yes? That means you probably did the PLC program, yes?
We went to what was called Bulldog, basically senior PLC.
Okay. All right. And then you go to the basic school. When do you decide that you're going to be an infantry officer?
I always wanted to be an infantry officer, but
you did. Why?
I had it on every straw pull because Major Duncan was a tanker, but he said go grunts because that was the backbone of the Marine Corps. So
that is true, though. He was right about that, yes?
Yeah, because, I mean, in my company, we only had, like, two slots for tankers, and those both weren't the guys in the top third. I was in the middle third, but that do the quality spread at TBS, so. But.
I'm with you. I think I was at the bottom of the top third. I wanted to be a grunt, and I think when I went through, anybody who wanted to be a grunt got to be a grunt. And actually, I was at the basic school when Ty was there. I just missed him by a few months at the infantry officer course. So you get commissioned. You get commissioned. You go to the basic school, and then you then you go to
June 1992.
You go to 1-7.
Right. And Colonel Smith was my first. I mean, he was the company commander of my company for a few days in Bravo Company, and then Captain Goodmanson took it over then. And
all right, so then you hang out in the desert, and that's where you got my decision making class. That thing was the bomb.
Yes.
That thing was the bomb. Yes, tell everybody.
It was.
It was. People think I'm bullshitting. That class was awesome, wasn't it?
But you still got the. I mean, you got still got any slides for it? Or
yeah, I do. Well, I can't.
Yeah, you should put that on the web.
Yeah, I'll come to Tampa and give it to you again. And how many? Yeah. When was the last time you ever heard a teacher say the F word that much in a class?
Never. I mean, but that by my speech therapist Sharon, she can't tell me how many fillers I use, such as and like and repetitive stuff. I said, well, that's what I'm replacing profanity with. I mean,
my brain doesn't know what to say because normally it goes to other words there.
Exactly.
She doesn't understand, okay? It's just the way we speak. Hell, I'm the worst at it. I do that all the time, and I do this every day. But anyway, so Sharon's your speech therapist?
Yes.
Is she? Well, let's talk about her. Is she a nice lady? You like her?
Oh, yeah. She's phenomenal.
Really?
And she's all the current. She's always got the students working with her. We were from the University of South Florida or Florida State.
Right.
And the current one is, her name is Ashley, and she's actually got a job working in the, she just got a job. Oh, she's going to be in the San Diego VA.
Oh, really?
Out from La Jolla. Yeah, so she's great, too.
Okay, well, tell her when she comes out here, she can look me up, and she can buy me dinner.
All right.
All right. The go ahead.
What I told her is that the cost of living out there is pretty high, and thank God I didn't have to pay state income tax when I was out there.
Yeah, living the good life. It's the cost of living a little bit different. That's one of the reasons why so many people head to Tampa, is because retired military don't pay state income tax.
And, exactly.
And the cost of living is not bad. Living near the coast and nothing like what you pay in California. So a lot of military.
No. I saw this, the number one state for retirees recently.
Florida, just what you need, a bunch of military retirees all the time. Talk to me about, you leave 1-7, and then what was your next duty station after that?
Well, Parris Island, South Carolina.
Uh-oh.
And I went through, went there as a series commander and a company commander for 3 years.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. Well, my wife was in, my current wife was in college at the time, so at the University of Florida. So it was, I was able to get down there.
All right.
Ever so often.
All right. And that's where, that's how you met your wife?
Well, we're from the same hometown. Her name is Anna, and my cousin was married to her best friend. So we went out on a couple of dates, and then when I was in the 29 Palms, and she came out, she flew out to the 29 Palms with my sister, and basically we hit it off, and that's when I got orders to Parris Island, so I knew I'd be closer to her.
That's love. When you go to 29 Palms, that's love, man, because what did she think? People from that haven't never seen the desert, and they come to the desert, that's always amusing, isn't it?
Yeah, but thank God I had butt buddies at Pendleton, so I didn't have to. She only spent about two days in 29 Palms itself, but I had butt buddies that lived at Pendleton, so she went down. I mean, we all went down there to see the sights.
All right. Yeah, that's love, man. When a girl will come see you in 29 Palms, that's when you know, like, this is serious. Because can you imagine when she gets there, right? You're driving up that hill, and when you come up the Morongo Basin, and then you get to the top where Yucca is, and you look, and you're like, oh, my God. The whole place is like this. And she's never seen that before. That's love. Like, yeah, I'm in love because this is a shithole. Holy smoke. All right. So, go ahead.
But I mean, it was good training out there, though.
You know what? That's the only reason it's there. Good training. I'm with you on that. What about, after you do Paris Island? Well, let me ask you this, Ty. Do you have any thoughts on Paris Island going through a lot of stuff right now?
Yes.
You have any thoughts on that?
Well, it's damn tragedy, and but I think supervision. I mean, if you not constantly check in or come around unannounced, and the drill instructors are under a lot of pressure for meritorious promotions, and just look it's a highly competitive environment, so they're gonna do stuff that pushes the edge of the envelope. But that's screwed up. What happened to that recruit?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Ty, that it seems like every time when the Marine Corps has an event like this, there's people that know about it, whether it's other staff NCOs or NCOs or officers even. And if you go through urinating on bodies in Afghanistan, you go through, a few incidents at Paris Island, you go through the 3-5 incident in Iraq in 2006 where they yanked a guy out of his home and killed him. Murdered him, essentially. There's the people that are supposed to stop that stuff are standing there, and it's interesting because when you look at it, they make an initial attempt, and then there's a confrontation between the people that want to do, things that are wrong, and then somebody who's trying to stand up, and in every instance, they don't stand up enough, and if they did, they would have kept people from losing their career, going to jail, and it just seems like we have this problem in the Marine Corps with what I call leadership at the point of confrontation, where you look at me and you say, hey, man, that's not cool, knock it off. And I say, hey, shut up and get out of here, man. What are you going to do about it? It's none of your business. Get out of here. And instead of that other Marine saying, sorry, man, if you want to fight, we'll fight, but I'm not having that. Instead of that, it's like, all right, I'm out. I raised the issue. I did what I was supposed to do. Now it's on him. And then bad things happen. So it just seems like, when those things do happen, we have people standing there. They just don't do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. And, it's always at Paris Island.
Yeah. That's crazy, isn't it?
It's two, because I don't know. I mean, Paris Island's got that reputation. But.
Do you think young staff NCOs and NCOs go there? The mystique of Paris Island, the causeway, the sand fleas, the history, and they think they have to be harder than because look, you have a captured audience, right? You have a captured audience. You don't need you can make Marines by simply following the SOP there. But it seems like on a regular basis, people feel the need that they have to go outside of it. And the question to me is, why do you think that happens so much, especially at Paris Island? Is it that mystique?
Well, I definitely think there's a difference between East Coast Marines and West Coast Marines, because there's more stuff to do on the West Coast. I mean, but I've been at 29 Palms and I've been at Camp Lejeune and I think the work ethic is greater on the East Coast, but I mean, that's just my opinion, but.
All right. We have to take a break, Ty. When we come back, I want to talk about the rest of your career. I want to talk about your time in Afghanistan and then some of the things you've gone through since you were shot in the head in Afghanistan. So don't move. Don't touch that dial. Everything sounds good. And we'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio. On a Thursday, we talk transitions. And my guest is retired Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel Ty Edwards from the state of Florida, the city of Tampa. More of him next, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends, These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve Enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue on a Thursday. Mike McNamara with you. We're doing Transition Thursday. So we'll get to the transition part here in a minute. My guest is retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Ty Edwards. So, Ty, first of all, thanks for doing this.
My pleasure, Mac.
I got your name from Phil Smith, a mutual friend of ours. I taught with Phil at the Infantry Officer Course. And you've heard him, he's been on the show a few times. And
yes.
He asked me, he said, hey, man, you should have Ty Edwards on your program. I said, who's Ty Edwards? And he said, here's his phone number. Call him and find out. And so, no, I want to thank you for doing this. So you leave Paris Island, and do you go back to school after Paris Island?
Yeah, I went to AWS.
All right, so you go to AWS, and then where?
I was slated to go to 3-8, but I did a summer platoon commander stint at OCS. So because 3-8 wasn't due to get back from their deployment, but the minor called me at home when I was on leave. And after OCS and said that they needed captains for 3-2. So that's where how I ended up with Colonel Smith.
Okay.
Because he was battalion commander of 3-2.
All right. So and what year are we talking about?
Well, 1999 to 2002, but the first battalion commander I had was Lieutenant Colonel Jim Walsh. So he I had an H&S company then, and then when Carl Smith took over, I took command of a Kilo company, 3-2.
Okay, so you're a company commander, and that goes up to 2002, and so
yes.
So the war hasn't started yet, and so in 2002, where do you go?
I did in Montgomery, Alabama, with the Lehman Company 323.
All right, so. So you're doing that. Now, does 323, do they get mobilized for the march up or anything
like
that?
Yes, they did. And while we were sitting at 29 Palms when they were doing the march up, and we were watching it on TV, but we got over to Kuwait about and then went into Iraq about 2 days before hostilities ended, before the ground war ended. So we were in Wasit province, 323, in Al-Kut.
Right, and then how long did you stay there?
In Iraq, only about five months, and then they retrograded the division. First Marine Division was there, and they backed out and then backloaded, and that we turned Wasit over to Ukrainian military.
There you go. So you guys leave there, and so the division goes back in 2004, and then the insurgency starts and it's on, and you stay and you finish your I&I duty, and from there do you go back to school?
Right.
You go back to school?
Yes, I want to. Well, we were in Montgomery, Alabama, so. I went to the Air Command and Staff College, which is also in Montgomery, so I wouldn't have to uproot my family.
Okay. So you do that, and then from there, where do you go?
The training officer for 3rd Marine Division in Okinawa.
Okay. All right. And now this. And what year is it now?
So 2006, June of 2006.
Okay, June of 2006. Now the war's been going on. You got a little taste of it during towards the tail end of the march up. Were you like most infantry guys? Were you wanting to get over there and participate?
Yeah,
and participate. Talk about that, because I know a lot of guys were frustrated if just their career cycle, you know, kind of hit like yours. Yeah, I left the fleet in 2002, and then I missed, and then I didn't get back till later. What was that like?
Well, I mean, it was frustrating, but Colonel Jeff Haynes was the G3 of the 3rd Marine Division, and he had just left as my battalion and I before I went to school. So he went from 323 battalion and I to G3 of 3rd Marine Division. So he was able to hook me up with an individual augment billet at Multinational Corps right, so right off the bat, so I spent about a week in Okinawa. Didn't take my family over, and I deployed to Iraq. But I was just pretty much making slides, the whole PowerPoint slides the whole time. But I was.
So you get selected to go on this on an advisory team to Kunar Province. Now, Kunar Province, it was one of the more violent provinces in Afghanistan. Yes.
Yes, but we weren't in the battle space. Task Force Rock, who was the 173rd Airborne Infantry Battalion, was a little bit south of us, and so that they had some. They were getting it every day, but we were a little bit north, northern Kunar, in Nuristan Province, but.
All right, and then so you're a battalion advisor, for the Iraqi Army.
Well, the Afghan National Army.
Sorry, wrong country.
Yes.
So talk to us about the day you got shot in the head. What were you guys doing? What happened?
Okay. By this time, the 1st Infantry Division, the CAF squadron from the 1st Infantry Division, commanded by Lieutenant Colonel Jim Barker, had taken over the battle space. But we were all mounted up in vehicles, and we were going to take security from the U.S. Army, from the 1st Infantry Division, was leading the convoy. And then we had about three Afghan Army vehicles in front of ours. And basically, these were just Ford Ranger pickup trucks with the dismounted Afghans in the back.
Right.
And my vehicle, and then six or seven Afghan vehicles behind us. And we're going to resupply a village, soldiers and, Afghans, that were, in a village, called, Nishigam, that was a little bit, to the south of us. So, they were having national elections at the time, so, for Karzai. But, anyway, we're traveling, down south of, along the only road that would support, Humvees in the area. And it ran right along the Kunar River. But, we rounded a bend, and, we got ambushed. So,
What kind of ambush was it, Ty? Was it, did it start with an IED and then machine gun fire?
No, it was a small arms.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I guess.
Ever encountering an IED in our battle space.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I mean it was. I don't know. Now after I got wounded, they had IEDs all the time. But before I got wounded, nothing.
It's interesting because different parts of the country, because, you know, you didn't see a whole lot of indirect fire attacks where we were, and I never understood that. You know, it's so much easier to shoot and cause casualties when you're, you know, shooting mortars, shooting rockets, and certainly maybe they couldn't get it, but they got a lot of other stuff. And the other thing the Afghans didn't particularly care to do was the whole suicide bombing thing that we faced in Iraq.
I mean, I don't know if it's culturally or right. what, but I mean, never had a suicide bomber for
yeah.
that.
Yeah, it was just different, how different parts, and you talk about, you know, we saw IDs, and again, I was there after you were, but not in Kunar, I was down in Helmand, but it's just interesting how at different places, different times, you didn't see things that, you know, you saw that were, that proliferated the rest of the country. So you guys get ambushed, you guys dismount, and, yes. Is that when you got shot in the head?
Yes. Well, I was, okay, so I got out of the vehicle first to go help the Afghans, and we're taking pretty heavy fire, and when I got up to rush again, because it was probably about 50 yards between me and the Afghan soldiers that were returning fire, I got hit. So in the meantime, there were three other guys in the vehicle. Lieutenant McQuiston was manning the machine gun in the turret. I had my Afghan interpreter Akimi in the back in the passenger seat. And me in the front passenger seat, and Doc Albright was driving the vehicle. So I didn't even take Doc on most of the convoys I went on, because thank God he was with us that day. So I got hit as soon as I basically rushed to be with the Afghans, but
and so hold on. So Ty, so you when you get out of the vehicle, you're moving to help the Afghans and get them organized to fight off this ambush, which is something people did on a pretty regular basis. And what part of the round does it penetrate your helmet into your head, and what part of your head does it hit?
Okay, it penetrated, went through my helmet, and it went through the left side of my head, and then lodged in the back of the helmet.
The round, so the round went through and through, went through your, penetrated one side of your head and came out the other, and then the round stayed in the helmet?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Most guys don't survive that. How did you survive?
A lot of good medical attention. Thank God I had Doc Albright with me that day, and, so the rest of the story is, after the fight, after I got wounded, Lieutenant McQuiston was shot through the arm, and he had to bandage himself, and because he was the man in the machine gun.
Right.
But our vehicle got hit by RPG fire, and it knocked everybody out inside the vehicle, and Kenny, our Afghan interpreter, rushed forward to see if I was still alive, and then he went back and got Doc Albright, and then Lieutenant McQuiston was coordinating the medevac. But the good thing was the U.S. Army troops in the front got out of the kill zone. They called for supporting. They set up a base of fire in the called for supporting arms from Bob Bostic, which was our where we were based.
How far were you guys away from the firm base when you got hit?
I'd say about no more than 3 or 4 miles.
Okay, so you get hit, the lieutenant gets hit. They're obviously trying to destroy your vehicle because after they destroy your vehicle, they know that the communication and the supporting arms piece goes away, right?
Yeah, exactly. But and another thing, our vehicle had a 240 Golf machine gun, so I mean that they were right. Wanting to put it out of action.
Yeah, but you know what? More important than that 240 is the radio, because that radio brings death, and so for a lot of reasons that once you deal with that was it an up armored Humvee? What kind of vehicle was it?
Yeah, up armored Humvee.
Okay, so yeah, so up armored Humvee, and but again, so do they ground? They CASEVAC you back to the firm base ultimately, and then you get airlifted out of there?
Well, they ground medevac me to back to a patrol base, and then they medevac me by air back to the Bob Bostic. I mean, because it was only about a mile to the patrol base.
Okay.
So,
what's a time?
Which was under construction. I mean, we were just building at the Overwatch. There was a bridge run by Afghan police that we were watching. So.
Helping out with that. Talk to me about what's your next memory. So you get shot in the head and the lights go out. What's the next time when do you wake up?
Well, I remember Doc and Hakimi dragging me off by my flight carrier. I mean, they're still under fire, and so, and then I remember the helo landing, but I don't remember much after that until I went to once I got medevac from Bob Bostic, which was where we were based in the Ray.
Right.
I went to Bagram, and I stayed there for 3 or 4 days, and I was out.
Right.
I was in medically induced coma during that time, but I ultimately ended up in Bethesda, Maryland, in the National Naval Medical Hospital.
Okay, and do you remember the first time you woke up out of that? How long after that was your first memory?
I was in and out. I could hear what was going on around me, and but as far as my wife and everybody knew, I didn't know anything. But
you could hear what they were saying, and they didn't know you could hear.
Yeah.
Did somebody say, "Man, he's ugly"? Did you remember them saying that? Or like this, they didn't think you could hear, and they're talking about you. Do you remember? Like, yeah. And I heard what you said too. I didn't forget. Just so you know.
But I could see in here, but I was I don't know. I remember just the TV in my room, and like various visitors and everything like that. So,
wow.
But the I guess one of the first memories I had was of the assistant commandant at the time, Joe Amos, coming up and, I mean, saying something in the air and basically to get back on my feet and that they needed me to my leadership and things like that. So I really appreciated that.
Sure. What, Ty, what, how much of your brain did you lose?
I don't know particularly, okay. But it was a pretty good chunk.
What about, no, I mean, I saw, I'm looking at a picture of you in your dress blues. It's a good looking picture, by the way. You look like you're at some kind of mess night talking to some, it looks like you're talking to a general. I don't know who it is, but he's an old dude with gray hair. I don't know who.
Oh, post injury, right?
Yeah, no, it looks like you're post injury, you're a lieutenant colonel. It looks you're in your mess dress.
Uh-huh.
Do you know who that
is?
That
was probably one of the Marine Corps balls in Tampa.
Right. It looks like it. The so talk to me about you start to rehab this thing. How do you do that? And so what year, and this is in 2008?
Yes.
So this is in what month in 2008?
October 2008 was
okay.
When I got wounded.
So we're talking about 8.5 years ago. How long was it before you could talk again?
Well, I could say a few words, within 3 weeks or a month.
Okay.
And, I spent like 6 weeks in Bethesda, and then about a month on the ICU board, and I can only say like a few words. Mostly helped me. Like any time I wanted something, I mean, I can only say help me, but I mean.
So, Ty, talk to me. What is that like? Where your brain's functioning and you're thinking things right, but you're somehow the neural pathway between what you're thinking and your mouth has been disrupted. What's that like? And how frustrating is that not to be able to express the things you're thinking?
Oh, incredibly frustrating. I mean, once I got down here to Tampa, I mean, I would point at something for my wife to get because I couldn't, or my dad to get for me, and they didn't know what I was pointing at, or, I mean, it's like, God bless my wife, but, I mean,
Saint Anna.
She probably wanted to kill me.
Well, look, no, she was in love, man. Remember, she went to 29 Palms for you, okay? That's love. That's love right there. That's straight up love. She's in over her head. So for you, did you start speech therapy? Did you have any other physical injuries? You know, can you still walk? Tell us about physically. How did you come out of all that?
Okay. Well, because of I got shot in the left side of my head. The right side of my body is pretty much paralyzed. But I still got sensation in it, but it just doesn't work right. So I can stand up, but I can't walk without assistance and a walker. It's been a lot of therapy and to get to this point. But
all right, so how do you get around? You get around in a wheelchair?
Yes. And thank God I got the use of my left arm.
Right.
But I mean, I was right-handed before, so that's another issue. So I had to relearn to do everything with my left arm. But speech has improved the greatest, because when I first got here, I mean, I could only say like two words, and what I would have said a lot of times didn't make sense. And like, I remember my first speech therapist in the VA down here, Catherine Kiefer, who I had the whole time I was inpatient, would show me like a picture of a banana or something, and I'd say broom or something like that. So I'd say that's the most improvement I've made. But when I was first in Bethesda, they told my wife and my dad that it would take like years for me to feed myself again. So I mean, but it was only about two. I mean, I was feeding myself within two months. But they said that 90% of the gains would be in the first year, and I've made so much improvement after the first year. So I mean, I think as long as you keep working, I mean, you can constantly improve.
My guest on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio is a retired Marine Corps Lieutenant Colonel Ty Edwards, and we're talking about he was shot in the head in Afghanistan in 2008. We're talking about his career, and we've been talking here about his comeback from that injury. Ty, I got to take another break. Don't go anywhere.
Okay. Right?
Because what I want to talk about next is there's a lot of people that get faced with challenges. From traumatic brain injury to amputations. And I want to get your thoughts on overcoming issues. We just started talking about it. So sit tight and we'll talk about that stuff next. So don't go anywhere, all right?
All right.
All right. Ty Edwards, who he and I served together in 29 Palms, I was a company commander, he's a lieutenant, and he sat through a class that I gave. And I had the good sense when he came on a little bit ago to say it was a good class. So you know he's a smart guy. Anyway, we'll take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on a Thursday edition right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Another guy from Mississippi.
I can't walk out.
Elvis.
Because I love you too much.
Big sweaty dude with a cape on. Right? And none of his friends would say, dude, you look ridiculous up there, sweating like a pig, no tan with a cape on. Come on, man. You need to PT a little bit. But he's from Mississippi, Tupelo. All right, we continue. Ty Edwards, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired now, medically retired, And Ty, first of all, are you an Elvis guy, being a fellow Mississippian?
I wasn't initially, I used to watch his shows back in the 70s, but
it's pretty much a mess, though, you got to admit.
Yeah.
But he is from Mississippi, so you got to be down. He's one of your boys, right?
Yeah.
He's on the team. What do you tell people? You have traveled a road that not too many people travel. Gunshot wound to the head, you know, part of your brain gone. I'm sure other parts. I mean, just, you know, I'm trying to think. You know, we've had other guys come on. A friend of mine, Justin Constantine, I don't know if you met Justin, but he's another gunshot wound to the head guy. And just the not only the damage the bullet does, but just the force of the blow to the brain does its own damage.
Yeah.
What do you tell people when they're faced with things like you've been faced? Do you have advice for them?
Well, I tell them that they gotta work hard, and if things get better, and as long as you're above ground, you gotta work your ass off. I mean, like do what the doctors tell you and the therapists and just heed their advice. And
talk to me about the VA. Has your experience been a good experience with the VA? Do you find yourself fighting with them at all, or talk to me about the kind of experience you've had with them?
Well, my experience with them has been phenomenal. And, you know, when I was in Bethesda, when they first told us we were going to come to Tampa, you know, that all I could think of was the scene in Born on the 4th of July where he's in the Brooklyn VA, and like he's covered in crap, and so I said, "Oh, great!" But I mean, it wasn't like that at all. And I'm so thankful for the VA. But we came down here because they only have like four or five polytrauma centers across the country. And
could you explain, Ty? Could you explain to people what a polytrauma center is?
They deal with the brain injury, particularly, and they got a big spinal cord unit down here in Tampa as well, but the brain injury is the main thing. So the other ones are in Richmond, Virginia, and one's in Minneapolis, and then one out on the West Coast, and I believe they one down in San Antonio now, but that wasn't available when we came here. But, I mean, I've only been in one VA, but it's hard to imagine that, I could be treated any better. But,
what's been the most difficult part of your recovery?
I think, not being able to walk. I mean, at first I was, like, band and determined that I would, walk out of the VA. I mean, I was inpatient for like a year and a half, but that wasn't in the cards. But because I kept seeing all these other guys with brain injuries, and they would be look to me like in worse shape than I was initially, but then they would be walking, and but they may have other issues like memory, and so I mean, I'm just grateful to be above ground, basically.
No kidding. The so Ty, as you recovered, did you find out what happened that day on the ground? Because as we were talking, you know, the gunshot wound to the head, you don't have a whole lot of time, you know, because you can't stop the bleeding most of the time. What saved you? Was it just the quick actions of the Afghans that were with that you were with the action of your interpreter? He sounds like he had a lot to do with it. Have you been able to piece that together?
Well, Akimi was my interpreter, and then luckily the corpsman that I was with was a senior corpsman, and so he had like specialized medical training. So Stephen Albright was his name, and so I after the incident when I was in the hospital down here in Tampa. That brought me the statements and the incident that day, and Dr. Albright pretty much saved my life.
The
what all he did
is it was his actions that got. That saved your life. And the here's an email question. Mac, just wanted to let you know what an amazing interview we've all got a chance to listen to this morning. Talk about humbling. Ty's courage, the courage of his family, is pretty amazing in a day and age where we don't hear stories like his nearly enough. My question for him is this. Is he able to read? I believe when Justin Constantine was on talking about his gunshot wound to the head, he was talking about he had to relearn how to read and speak again. Can he read? And how is his memory? Just want to say how inspirational Ty is. Semper Fidelis. Hope he has a great weekend coming up, and certainly proud that he's a member of our tribe and still above ground. So, Ty, talk about reading and talk about your memory.
Well, I thank God I can still read because I loved it before, and I got a whole stacks of books like that I've still got to get to, but slower now. Yeah, it's definitely slower now, but than I used to. But thank God my vision wasn't impaired. But
that's amazing and of itself. I mean, like we were talking about, just the force. Oftentimes is enough. Your head absorbing that kind of force is enough to you know really affect your vision for the rest of your life. in terms of blowing out corneas and things like that, simply because of the force of the blow to your head. So that's pretty amazing. What about your memory? Your memory still good, or pieces of it?
Well, I have a short term, not so much, but short term memory isn't so good, but long term, I think I can pretty much remember everything that, just about everything that happened.
Got it. Okay.
Before. But, thank God for smartphones, because I use that.
Well, no, we're all.
I mean, you write names down. I'm pretty. I mean, I'd say I'm pretty good with names, because once I type it in my phone, I got it, and then I refer. Back to them if I see somebody approaching or. Just in general.
All right. Another email question for you. Mac, just wanted to give Ty a shout-out. I did not serve with him, but served at the same time. And the courage and selflessness that guys like him put out for this country still takes my breath away and is a reminder on this upcoming Memorial Day weekend that freedom is certainly not free. Just want to give him a shout out and tell him how proud we are of him. The road he's traveled isn't easy, but it certainly is what we expect as Marines. Question for him, is there anything that we can do for him to help his recovery, his quality of life? So a lot of Marines out there that will listen to this, Ty. Anything that we can do for you to help out your quality of life?
I appreciate the comments, but I'm good. I mean, thank God for the technology that they got now, because between my power chair and I got the program Drag and Dictate on my computer, which is a voice recognition.
Right.
If I think of something, I'll let you guys know. But I'm good.
Now your kids are how old now, Ty?
Well, 15 and 14. And, I can't drive, so, we only got one driver in the family, and that's Anna. But, just staying busy, they always got sporting events or activities, so, I mean, that's pretty much keeping me busy right now.
Yeah, I was looking at a picture of you and your family. What's up with that nasty beard you got going?
that from my beard days. Yeah, I had to shave that off because it was feeling nasty.
You looking nasty, man? You and that Auburn hat and your sunglasses, not a good look. You look like a criminal, man. You look like you're about to hold up a 7-Eleven or something.
came in Apache.
All right. The
Joe Dirt.
I'll tell you what, you throw a mullet on that, and you're like Joe Dirt's other brother. You're Joe Dirt's brother.
Exactly.
What it's an interesting email here. Hey Mac, I have a good buddy who's struggling, who's a double amputee. I just wonder if Ty gives advice to other guys that have been impacted by the war. And one of the things I realized by being around my friend is that, you know, some people get impacted, and I would tell people that have post-traumatic stress that you're lucky. You can deal with that. I think that my friend, if all he was dealing with was post-traumatic stress, he would laugh at that. What he deals with is forever. I wonder if Ty has advice for other Marines or warriors that have been impacted forever by circumstances involved in the war. How does he deal with the unfairness of it, and does he give advice?
Well, yes, but I would. I mean, you can't dwell in the past. I mean, and move on, and basically, you can't cry over spilled milk. I mean, I see. So, bottom line is, there's always people in worse condition than themselves. So, what, like we learned about at IOC and TBS, you can go through life with an external focus, or you can be centered internally. And you got to go through with an external focus, like focusing on others and what you can do for them, and if you go through it with an internal focus, like always focus on yourself, and that's a recipe for disaster. But basically, that's what I would tell them.
Okay. Another question for you. I noticed in one of the pictures of your family, I think everybody's wearing a Semper Fi Fund shirt. Talk a little bit about the Semper Fi Fund. That's a pretty incredible organization. Yes.
Yes. And there's a lady by the name of Michelle Hall down here that coordinates it all, and her husband is a retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel, and she's great, and they do get us together all the time. She really runs a good program down here. And there's so many people in that. Between Tampa and Orlando that are retired, I mean, medically retired or retired Marines, I mean, but she, I mean, that's a really good organization. And some of the other, if you look at operational costs, I think like 3% of Semper Fi funds budget goes to operational costs. So the rest of it is for events and programs and things like that. So, I mean, in comparison to some of the other programs out there,
right?
You get a lot more bang for your buck.
At the Semper Fi Fund. No, right. It's obviously we're sympathetic to it because originated by our Marine Corps tribe, and they continue to do great work. You don't see them in the news very often, except enabling other people. There's an amputee that ran the Boston Marathon with the flag. And, you know, what shirt was he wearing? You know, he's wearing a Semper Fi Fund shirt. So, you know, and the coolest thing they do is they help people put lives back together. And families like yours that are hugely impacted, if you lower your head an inch, it grazes the top of your helmet, right? And your life's not impacted the way it's been impacted. And so, they deal with that all the time. And it's just, pretty amazing, the work that they do enabling great families like yours, to continue to live better and better and better lives. I've got an email, and I was going to ask you this question, but I'll read the email. Mac, I heard that Ty has kids. How have his kids dealt with it? So this is obviously a learning experience for your whole family, you, your wife, your kids. What's it been like to go through this with your kids, Ty?
You know, I mean, I'm sure it's impacting them some, but I mean, my wife, Anna, just made sure to tell them that, I mean, I'm still their dad and that they're amazingly resilient. So, you would think me being in a wheelchair all the time would, that they would be embarrassed by me or whatever, but they're
embarrassed? Why the hell would they be embarrassed? Their dads, you know, you fought for our country. You know, you come through a gunshot wound to the head. What the hell would they be embarrassed about?
Well, I mean, I don't know if embarrassed is the right word, but just the
it probably was. I hate to chew your ass right here on the radio. But yeah, embarrassed was the wrong word, man. So since you used to be a subordinate to me, get your shit together, man. Embarrassed, not even close, man.
Apprehensive.
No, I'm with you. But it is. It's a huge change for your family. But inside all of that, that's still your dad. That's still, you know, the guy who loves you more than anybody else ever will on the planet, along with me. So it's been interesting. Do you ever have conversations with them about being wounded? I mean, have they ever sat and talked to you about it?
I mean. Like, I give, talks around at school or stuff like that. So they've heard it enough times. But I mean, that's what I would tell other Marines and soldiers is the more you talk about it, the better you'll be. and don't keep it inside. And like there's a World War II veteran by the name of Ed Shackford that was a POW of the Japanese for like 2 years. And he says that's one thing he always harps on is you gotta talk about your experiences. Don't hold them inside.
Interesting. All right, I've got an email. Hey Mac, ask Ty if Anna will come on at some point and talk about the journey from her perspective. So Ty, would you ask how do you say Anna's mate? Well, you don't need to say it, but.
Beatenholtz.
Yeah, Beatenholtz. Anna with the crazy middle name who loves 29 Palms. Would Anna ask Anna if she'll consider coming on and just talking about it from her perspective?
Okay, I will.
All right. What haven't I been smart enough to ask you that you want people to know about what you've been through? The impact of it or anything. Is there something that I haven't been smart enough to ask you that you want to get off your chest?
Well, I would say one, that the benefits of the VA, I mean, I know not everybody has got VAs around them that are like this one, but I know that they haven't got a lot of the same resources that we have around here, but.
Well, you know, one of the messages that, you hear is the VA is not perfect. There's not too many organizations that are. But one of the things we learn as Marines, as problem solvers, is, improvise, adapt, and overcome. I mean, if you don't get what you're looking for from the VA, then plug into a different place in the VA or go to the veteran service officer at your county. But do not
exactly.
But don't quit. Do not give up.
Yes. And and as a caveat to that, I would say, I've seen a lot of vets that are pissed off and stuff like that, but you get a lot better treatment with kindness and respect than you do being bitter all the time. So, like, they may help you more if you're treating them with respect also.
Right. All right, we're going to do this again. Do you remember Tim Lynch?
Yes. Yeah, I do. And as a matter of fact, I just had dinner with his dad on Monday night. He lives down here in Tampa as well.
Jarvis.
Yeah. So Major Duncan, when I got to Tampa, he used to go speak at the recruit depot. So General Lynch was down here, General Deegan, and General Marty Still was down here as well. So
Marty Steele?
Yes.
Do you know him?
Yes.
All right. Well, when you see him, you tell him that you met me.
Uh-huh.
And tell him that tankers are second-rate citizens, and he knows it.
Okay.
right? Tell him he did a pretty good job becoming a lieutenant general and all that, and but really, especially for a second-rate citizen in the Marine Corps, well done. Okay? Make sure you tell him that.
All right.
Ty, first of all, we're gonna do this again, all right? Tim Lynch just sent me a message and said, hey, it's great to hear Ty. It sounds like he's doing great. We're awfully proud of him. Tell him Semper Fidelis and keep it up. So we'll do this again, Ty. You're, again, not as you and I were talking before, not a whole lot changes for us, you know, in our tribe. And you may... you may think you're different, but we sure as hell don't think you're different. And we're just, like you said, we're just so glad that you're still above the ground, because we know that the guys who really were unlucky are the guys who didn't come back. And so,
exactly.
All right, man.
Exactly.
First of all, thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you for having me on the show, and thank you for the show too. You're doing God's work.
Well, talking to Marines and talking shit, that's easy, man. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it.
No. All right, man. We will do this again. And I'm going to give you a call, and you tell the lovely Anna, who loves 29 Palms, that we I want to have her on, because you know what, you know this from you know, watching what Anna's going through, this is not easy stuff, and
right,
and there's a lot of caregivers that listen to the program, and so we'd love to have her on and get her perspective, but tell her I'm a nice guy, that I don't cuss nearly as much as I used to, and I won't cuss while she's on, so a nice Scandinavian girl can come on and be interviewed. And I won't even give her a good time for going out to 29 Palms and chasing you around the country, I promise.
All right,
bud. Have a good weekend. Thanks.
You too, Matt. Thanks.
No. Are you kidding me? It was an honor, man. See you. That is, that's our tribe right there. You know, and I say this, he called me sir. Can you believe that? That's the kind of human capital that joins the Marine Corps. And it takes your breath away. The courage and commitment, the selflessness, they're not just words. You see people live that, and it takes your breath away. And their families, their wives who go through this incredible experience with them, it just blows you away. So my thanks to him for doing that. We're going to take a quick break, and the Gunner's going to join us next on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Yeah, absolutely unbelievable. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light, put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve Enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook, go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years. You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. It is 9:13 on a Thursday. Again, my thanks to Ty Edwards for coming on. And hopefully Anna, the lovely Anna. Now, I want to meet her. Okay. No, I want to meet her. Yeah. Let me ask Mike. Mike, when a girl comes to 29 Palms because she's in love, how much is she in love with you?
A whole lot. Oh. She'll go to hell with you. She'll go down to the Hell's Gates and ding-dong bitch Satan. She goes to 29 Palms.
Right, all right. So she's from, I think she's from, like, Florida. And she's from, she's from the panhandle of Florida. And she comes to 29 Palms, right?
Oh, so she's a hillbilly. Yeah, she's a hick.
Yeah, but she's a hick from a green part of the country. And so she comes up the Morongo Basin, right? Right? She gets to the top and she sees Yucca Valley and the whole big basin. And how much are you in love at that point?
I've always heard people say that the desert's beautiful. And I tried really hard. I squinted. I tried different shades of lenses and my sunglasses. Hell, I looked at it even almost inebriated, and I still couldn't see that beauty that everybody talks about. I mean, I tried. Oh, you should see 29 Palms in the spring. Is it any different than the summer? Oh, it's much greener. What's green? What are you talking about? What's green in the desert? Oh, you should see it, Gunner. No, I'm good.
You were never stationed out there, were you?
No, I just trained out there. I was, Mac, I told you, I spent all, the only times that I was never stationed in 29 Palms, or Camp Pelican, recruiting duty, England, and when I was at Will at Weapons Training Battalion.
Wow, that's amazing.
All my other times, yeah, I was always in the 1st Marine Division. I started in the 1st Marine Division, went to England, came back to the 1st Marine Division, went to recruiting, came back to the 1st Marine Division, you know, got selected as a gunner, came back to the 1st Marine Division. I mean, it was great. Great.
How did you do that? You manipulated
the system. Good.
You manipulated the system a little bit, yes?
Everybody wanted me on their team. can you believe that? I tried to say that without a straight face. Wait, let me try that again. Let me try that one more time. Take two.
Okay.
Everybody wanted me on their team.
Of course they did. Of course.
Yeah. That sounded better. That was almost convincing. I almost convinced myself there.
All right. So a girl that comes from Lower Alabama to 29 Palms. That's straight up love, right?
Shit, yeah. And you know, it's funny you said that. The people that live in the Panhandle, that is considered Lower Alabama. It's not Florida, by the way.
They do.
Because you guys are no different than those Alabama, you know,
hillbillies. Yeah.
Hillbilly, yeah. Oh my goodness.
So that ain't Florida, okay? I know where Florida is.
That's lower Alabama. Alabama's just annexed that. I would call it Lower Alabama.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't really know this till
annex.
The western edge of Florida is 160 miles from New Orleans as the crow flies.
Oh yeah, it's not. Yeah, the panhandle, I mean, what is it? How long is it? It's a couple hundred miles, right?
No, it's
But it's only like, what, 4 miles deep?
It's more than that. From Tallahassee, let's see, from Tallahassee to the border, which is essentially right near Mobile, is about 200 miles. From Jacksonville to Mobile is about 400 miles. All right. So Lower Alabama, from Alabama to the coast is about, hold on, I'm doing this. It's about 40 miles. All right.
So you said from where? Mobile?
Yes.
Let's get Pensacola to like Tallahassee.
Pensacola, it might as well be Lower Alabama too. I mean,
shit, yeah.
So anytime you hear, do you know Gary Kling? Static?
I know Kling, yeah.
He lives in Lower Alabama now, and and Pensacola is right outside Mobile. Okay, it's a joke. So that's how I found this out. I was gonna have him on to be interviewed because actually, Static winds up. He was the air officer in for the division in 2004 during the Fallujah thing. General Mattis loved him. Right, Pensacola, 50 miles from Mobile. Which makes that straight up Alabama. So I'm going to interview him, and we're going to talk about aviation, blah 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 blah. And the time gets screwed up. And I said, how did you screw up the time? He said, I didn't screw it up. You did. Because being an aviator, they never accept responsibility, even when it's overwhelmingly theirs. And I said, right. What do you mean? He said, I'm 2 hours, not three. I said, but you're in Florida. He said, yes. I said, and? He said, it's only 2 hours where I live. I said, are you kidding me? He said, no. So then what I did was I looked at the map, and if you draw a line almost due south from Chicago, it goes right through Mobile, which is the central time zone. I didn't know that. I was a little bit surprised, and therefore I learned a little bit about the western, the panhandle of Florida in the central time zone. So, how about that?
Nice. Yeah, that story I told you about my exploits in Alabama, that was down by Lower Alabama, Warren, Alabama, right there near the border of Alabama.
That pulled you over and then was on your uncle's, porch when you pulled up?
Hey, boy. See the speeder ticket? You know what the speed limit here is, boy? 45, sir. No, it was 45 up that hill. 35 where you're at. I didn't see the 35 sign. Get in my car, boy. Then he took me on a tour. See that sign right there? What does that say? That says 55, sir. Now we're going up the top of the hill. What's that sign say? That says 45, sir. I'm down the hill. What's that sign say? What sign, sir? That sign over there by that tree. You mean behind the tree or by the tree?
You did not. you did not do that.
No, I didn't. I didn't mouth off, but I was like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. If I would have mouthed off, I would have never been talking right now.
That is quintessentially Mike, too. You mean behind the tree? Sliding his little editorial comment in there. But you were hoping that if you cooperated being a military guy, you were going to get out of the ticket.
Oh, right? Yeah. But no, the military thing was, what you doing in the Army base being a Marine? Well, sir, I'm going to school there. There ain't no Marines in an Army base, boy. What? I was in the Army. There were no Marines at Fort Benning. Oh, no, sir, I'm going to school at Master Bradley School. What? Marine Corps got Bradleys? No, sir. They got LAVs. Then why are you going to school for Bradleys? They're like, oh, my God. Is this guy being set? I mean, oh. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, about a lift off, man. And then the whole time, like I said, in the front seat, in the passenger seat, in the front seat, is some dude, like a Cletus, an Elmer or something, just sitting there looking at me. Not a word. You know? And I'm waiting for him to say, you got some pretty nice teeth there, boy. And I was like, oh, God, I'm out of here.
Except you couldn't leave. You were going nowhere.
No, yeah.
You could hear the dueling banjos playing in the background, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah. When he put me in the back seat of that, and you know, like I said, the police car had that big, big blue light on the roof.
Yeah.
Like no light bar, just like a blue light, one.
Like the guy in
Andy Griffith.
No, the
Andy
guy,
Griffith.
Yeah, the guy in the Burt Reynolds movies. What were those movies that he was in all the time?
Smokey and the Bandit,
that guy. Yeah. Right? He was that guy.
Yeah. Yep, that was that guy. Big guy, no uniform, just a badge and a gun, in a car.
Fat.
With a hat on. And then a cooter or a Cletus sitting in the front seat, not saying a word.
You got some nice teeth, boy.
You got some nice teeth on you, boy. I would have probably take off running. I wouldn't have. No, I would have taken off running. I would have fought him.
You wouldn't have.
But like I said, then the salt in the wound, Matt, was after when we were done with the education of the speed limit signs on that stretch of road at the top of the hill. All right, boy. You can go now. And my car is like a quarter mile down the road. Can't you take me down to my car? And then, again, more salt in the wound when he pulls up. You're Joe Warren's boy? Yes, sir. No, well, I'm not his son. No, I'm his godson. You said you were his son. No, I said godson, sir. Joe Warren got no boy in the Marine Corps that I know of. No, sir, I'm not his boy. I'm his godson.
Did you have to explain?
Joe and, yeah, Joe and Vi, his wife, were my godparents. Vi was my mom's aunt. You know, and he's like, well, that make no sense, boy. Everything, boy, it make no sense. Why is Marines doing it in R4 Benning, Georgia? We go to school there. There's a whole new world out there if you just get outside of Warren, Alabama. Yeah, Billy.
Yeah, it's good to think those things, right?
Yeah, a lot of things were going through my head. As long as my lips didn't engage, yeah. Man, I was going to be good. But you know me, I was biting it hard, man. I was like, oh.
Mike's undisciplined mouth. Oh, boy, why you got blood running on down your lip? Because if I don't bite.
Did you just spit out my arm, boy? Wipe it off. I can touch it. Wipe my your spit off, boy. I'm telling you right now. I'm not touching you. You better wipe spit off my arm.
Oh, my God. That is so funny.
That's Southern Alabama. Yeah, Southern Alabama.
Lower Alabama, Florida. Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what. And I didn't really obey the speed limit too many places that I went, but when I went through Mississippi and I went through Louisiana,
yeah.
When I went through Louisiana, Texas didn't really scare me that much.
It better.
No, it doesn't.
Texas is the place your ass will disappear in a California fucking license
no,
car.
But Louisiana, they don't even speak the same language, okay? Louisiana.
Yeah, they got that Cajun.
Yeah, they start with that. Hold on, let me get Jack over here. Maybe my dog can understand your country ass, right?
Oh yeah, say that. Uh huh. We can say that now. We're on the radio. Unless you've been in that position, you ain't seen shit like that. That's going through your mind, but it's yes sir, yes sir, no
yeah.
sir, no sir.
Or no, I would just
because you know. You know, you could, your ass would disappear in those little small back country and no one would ever know you were there.
Some bayou.
Yeah.
No, I just look at my dog. He's like, why are you looking at your dog, boy? I'm just hoping he could translate whatever your country ass is saying to me.
Yeah, that would work out real well. Because then you'd be locked up, and then the next thing you'd be hearing is say, yeah, get Joe Bob. Yeah, get Frankie and Tommy, too. I got a pretty one sitting here in the cell. You guys can have them.
Exactly. You know, and we joke about it, but it's like that. Remember Foghorn Leghorn? I say, boy, that cartoon used to make me laugh my ass off. I say, what's wrong with you, boy? Why can't you run that jackhammer? I used to... Oh, man. All right, Mike's got a funny story about stolen valor. Tell him, are you going to read the email? What are you going to do?
Let me see if I can find it. So, as I'm looking for it again. So I get this email, and it's a name that I don't, well, it's just, the first name is Timothy. So I look at the email, and I'm thinking, you know how you, so on my email, there's like this, hi Mike, I was speaking with Mark in regarding to the order, and then it cuts off, because it's kind of like it shows you who it's from, the subject, and then the first line of the text. So there's one that I got from Timothy, and it said, regarding stolen valor. And I'm thinking, whatever, you know, like maybe a whatchamacallit, but then it says, Mike, or should I say Gunner, or should I say maybe not even served in the Marine Corps. And so I'm reading this like, what? And he says, I have noticed that on Facebook you have pictures posted of you in various places with Marine Corps uniforms on. I am not quite sure that if you have actually ever served. And then it just goes on to this whole bullshit of, you know, I make a point to go out and look out for people that have stolen valor, blah, 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 blah. And you, sir, yeah, and so you sort of look like you are a person that has no idea of what to wear on your uniform. What?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. What is that crazy pineapple bullshit thing you got going?
Yeah.
Yeah, and who are you trying to fool with that?
Who authorized that shit? You Polynesian kook?
Yeah, you... You stolen Valor kook? Yeah. All these other people in the picture might buy it, but I'm not.
Yeah, so please understand that I'm not trying to point you out. I just want you to understand that I think that you are a stolen Valor that, you know, and I'm like... So I sent him back an email saying, you got me. You got me. I want to confess right now, here and now, right now on All Marine Radio, that I never served in the Marine Corps.
It's a joke.
You got me. You got me. So I don't know what, you know, so Mac, that screws your whole life up. And,
I know.
And Rob and Rudy.
Mine's invalidated. We found out Rob was a shitbird. Ty Edwards, man. He got shot in the head, but he still remembers.
Big Cat.
Ty Edwards, he got shot in the head, but he still remembered that Schwartz was a shitbird as a lieutenant.
Schwartz wasn't a lieutenant. If I never served, then none of you guys were there either.
Oh, my God. First of all, who is this guy?
Maybe
where does he live?
Well, I said it. No, it's just I just sent an email, I literally came back and said, you got me. Please let me know where I can contact you from.
Yeah. Can I have your home address? I want to come and apologize in person.
Yeah. I just want to, I'm curious. I just want to get on the phone and go, is this a joke? Do I know you? Because if it is, that's a good joke. It really is. I like that joke.
I'll tell you what. Some of the stolen Valor pictures that you see are hilarious.
Yeah.
Are absolutely hilarious.
Sergeant Major Davis. Have you ever seen that one?
Who was that?
Black kid outside of a funeral in an Army Sergeant Major dress uniform. He's got all his ribbons and then all these medals hanging everywhere. And but you listen to him talk like, who's your Lieutenant Colonel? Who do you work for? Lieutenant Colonel Smith. Where are you at? What company are you in? One. What? What company is? One. Company one. You know? What? I would like to, you know, I think maybe twice I've talked to a stolen Valor guy, and they knew they were busted. But I would love to get in a conversation like, so, because they're asking, what's that medal for? Where'd you get your ground star for? Oh, I got it in Fort Kentucky. Fort Kentucky? Where the hell's Fort Kentucky? Well, I got it for saving a life in Fort Kentucky. Well, where's Fort Kentucky? Well, I can't talk about that. That's classified. Fort Kentucky's classified. I got to go now. I got to go on a special op mission in Fort Kentucky. This kid was, I was listening to that, and it's like, oh, my God, so funny, man.
No, some of it is so horrendous. There was one that I saw that was, I'm looking for the picture, but it was outside, I want to say he was in Arizona, and he's in his...
The Navy SEAL?
I don't know, but he's in his dress blues, and it's the uniform, you look at it, you're like, what? It just looks horrendous. And then the stories are just absolutely positively ridiculous. I saw a guy... standing on, have you ever seen anybody, a homeless guy? We may have talked about this, but he's a homeless guy, or he said he was. And he said, I'm not a loser, just a Marine down on my luck. And I see the sign, and whoop, I've never seen a sign like that in my life, right? But I had two thoughts. One, it's bullshit. Two, if it's not bullshit, I'll give the guy $20. So I'm going to walk Jack out in the country. So I just make a mental note where he's at, and I, on my way back, he's walking down the street. So I had somebody with me. I throw the car in park. I hop out, and I said, hey. I said, you were in the Marine Corps? And he said, yeah. He said, second Marine. I said, where'd you go to boot camp? And he said, San Diego. And then I went to 2nd Marine at Camp Pendleton.
Oh, shit. 2nd Marine.
I said, really? I said, okay. I said, then where? He said, well, I was with 18th Airborne Corps. We were assigned to 18th Airborne Corps in Tikrit. Mm. I said, I said, okay, give me the sign. And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, give me that fucking sign right now. And he said...
And you're a hard ass, a homeless guy?
So I said,
dude,
if you use the Marine Corps to beg for money, right, I will personally come by here every day and look for you, all right?
Gouge your eyes and skull blank you.
So he wouldn't give me the sign at first. I said, give me the sign. And so I grabbed him. I grabbed the sign. I threw the sign in the back
of my truck. That's your property, Mac.
I said, use another branch of the service to beg for money. Don't use the Marine Corps. Got it? He goes, hey, man.
Yes.
He said, hey, man, you got issues. I said, oh, I know. I know I do. I know I do. And I got,
yeah,
I
got, you got back, issues, man.
I got back in the car, and the person I was with says, really? I'm like, he's a liar. He's a beggar. He's a loser. Okay? And that's all okay. Just don't drag the Marine Corps into it. Okay?
I would have sat down, coached him what to say. No, not Second Marines, dude. Here, this is what you got to say. All right? When someone asks you, where'd you serve? All right? You just say, first of the first. And people will go, ooh.
Yeah.
1-1, huh, baby? That's right.
Wow.
Whiskey company. First of the first. You boozer. Now get off my street. No. I would never have bothered with a freaking homeless guy. You're a hard ass.
He's not homeless, man. He's just a liar.
Your heart, man, you got no heart, dude. You used to be a lot
nicer.
More caring. That sounds like something I would have done a long time ago.
Before you became Mother Teresa. You kind of gone through a transformation.
I'm better, man. I'm in a better place.
You are?
I let things like that go, yeah.
I miss the guy you used to be. He was way
I don't miss him.
He was way more fun than the guy you are now. The guy you are now is like, we're going to help everybody, and we're going to go.
Hey, have you ever seen the movie Switch?
No.
Is it Switch? No, Split. Split. Go see Split.
What's it about?
About the guy with 23 personalities. Pretty freaky.
Is that you now? Is that you now?
I think all Marines, if you are successful in both marriage and the Marine Corps, you have a split personality.
You have to.
You have to.
Because one personality.
You have to.
One personality can't do both those missions.
No. One personality, as soon as you come through the front door, it's got to change. Oh, hello, dear. How are you, sweetheart?
My little
sweet pumpkin bum. Yeah. Oh, sweet pumpkin bum. Oh, I love you. And then, as soon as you walk out that door, flip.
Hey,
Sergeant Strike. Come here, boy.
You know who I am?
Yeah. Do you know who the fuck I am? I'm going to kill you right now.
Who are you? Who are you? What's your name?
Who am I? Yeah. Who am I?
Yeah, those.
Are you serious?
Those two people can't exist under one roof.
No. So you have to have a split personality. To be a successful Marine, you have a split personality. To be an extraordinary Marine, you have to have more than a personality because you're dealing with other types of other people, so you know what role to play. Right?
It's always interesting. That's why it's always interesting meeting, like, the wives of Marines. Like, yeah, you know, he's interesting. But you think he's Prince Charming to you, yes? And the wife's like, yeah.
Oh, for crying out loud!
How bad did you screw that one up? She's like, "What?
Yeah, split personality, man. Do you know what your husband does in the field? No. He was trying to make a robe out of kangaroo rat furs. So, I mean, and you know how many kangaroo rat furs it takes to make a robe? Yeah. So, your husband's a sicko, and then he comes home and he's like, you know. Just a completely different person. And I always used to love that. Like, you'd see in a civilian manner. And then you have another personality with you out with the boys in civilian attire, you know?
Right.
You're not that Marine. You're definitely not the husband or the boyfriend.
You know,
you're the... What? You don't think I can do a backflip off a moving car?
Hey, Montana man's not happy. with Ty Edwards.
I know. Right? I know. I saw that.
Stop with the shitbird comments.
No, he said shotbird.
I know. It was autocorrect. I was stellar. Yeah, and that's how. This is what a shitbird he was. Edwards gets shot in the head, but he still remembers that Schwartz was a shitbird lieutenant. And then he says, "I want the old gunner back. The old gunner would have yoked that homeless dude right up."
That no, that personality I put to bed, man.
You're just like one personality now.
Oh no, I'm like seven, but still, I'm down from like 42. I retired the other guys.
Down. Yeah, the other guys are way more fun than you and your Mother Teresa thing you got going now. It's just like, oh my
they,
God.
Yeah, they were, the problem is they were too much fun and they got me in trouble most of the time.
I know, but that's part of the beauty of your personality. But you were constantly able to talk your way out of it. For instance, when was the last time you put your wife on Facebook Live?
Oh, I know. I got to do that again.
I mean, you don't even do that anymore because now you've got this Mother Teresa thing going. Oh,
yeah. Right. My wife used to have a nickname for me when I was back then.
Yeah.
She would say Sparko the Clown. Because I was, she'd be like, I don't know who this guy is, but all I know is Sparko the Clown is here. And Sparko the Clown isn't a good clown. He's not the clown with the happy smile face on. He's the evil clown.
But he's funny.
The mischievous clown. But he's funny as hell.
He is funny as hell. Yeah, we want...
Yeah,
Sparko the Clown.
Is
it Sparkle or Sparko?
Sparko.
We love Sparko, man. Sparko is like the source of great amusement for us. For instance, in your current personality, would you have like completely ruined the State Department guy in Afghanistan? No, you would have like tried to help him.
Yeah, I would have helped him now. I see the error of my ways, man. Today, if I would have met State Department guy, I would have been like, hey, we need to have a talk. Let me tell you here.
Hug it out?
Let me help you out.
State Department guy used to piss in a bottle and then dump the piss right outside their hooch in Afghanistan. And Mike got wind of it, literally. And then he, coming in early one morning, he sees him dumping piss outside of his...
The pee outside of the tent.
Yeah.
Yep. Right outside the tent. 20 more feet, he could have went into the bathroom and dumped it in the toilet.
Yeah.
He couldn't have not pissed in the bottle to begin with.
And now, this is a former Marine officer, but he was an Amtraker, so not very much of a Marine.
Yeah.
Amtrakers
always pee in bottles in their tracks because they don't want to get out.
Yeah.
But,
which is fine.
Yeah.
But yeah. You got to dispose of it appropriately.
That was the old me. And I feel bad that I threatened that guy's life.
What about walking out on the chaplain's mass on Christmas Eve?
Well, I never walked in, really. I walked in and then out. I was like, oh, God, not this guy. And I left.
Our chaplain. We had a Catholic chaplain in Afghanistan that was an asshole, right?
This guy was all about his own personal comfort than any other, oh, God, he used to bitch about, I want a car. How come my air conditioning isn't cold enough? I want faster internet speed. Oh, I want, why can't I have my own helicopter assigned to me when I go see the troops?
Dropping the F-bomb while he's talking about it.
Yeah.
It's like, who is then, this guy?
Every time we'd run into the Marines out in the area, we'd say, hey, did Chaplain come by and see us? Yeah, we really don't want him to come by again, sir. Can you please make sure? Because he was a burden on them.
He was an asshole. He made it all worse. He made it all worse. So we're going, there's a, let's see, it was.
A man of the cloth.
A man of the cloth. So we stopped going to church. Nobody would go to church. We're all Catholics. We all stopped going to church. Why? Because the chaplain's an asshole. Okay. And so it's Christmas, I think. And it's like, hey,
it was me, Joe, you,
Bronzy.
I think Big Cat was there, Bronzy.
No, Big Cat, he's a Protestant. He wouldn't go with us.
Oh, yeah.
It was Fallon that went, and Fallon needed to go because he's an angry, evil human being. And, yes, he is. And then, Bronzy reads the Bible, so he wanted to go. And so Mike stole the State Department guy.
Oh, Metro was there. Metro.
No, he's not a Catholic.
No, either Metro or Rudy were there. One of the pilots were there.
No. Well, maybe it was Metro, because
sure.
Rudy never went to church. He's a godless.
I think it was Metro.
He's a godless human. Metro? Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, rich. So there's like six of us that go down there.
I didn't steal the State Department's car.
I'm third.
I had the keys.
I was third in line, and so we get told that, hey, the chaplain out doing mass other places, father's, there's a different priest here, and he's saying mass. And we're like, what?
Yeah.
The asshole's not here. There's a replacement chaplain, and he's saying Christmas Eve. And we're like, yeah, awesome.
We'll go to church. Let's go to church.
So we all pile in the car. We're kind of having a good time as we drive down there. Everybody criticizing Mike as he's driving and yelling at him, and which he doesn't take well at all, which is part of the fun. And so we get out, and Bronzy is in the lead, and he's going because he's devoted. Like Bronzy, he's a religious guy. So he's in, and then Fallon, the angry one who needed to go because it doesn't matter if the chaplain's an asshole, Fallon's probably got him on asshole factor. Okay, so there's no way Fallon can tempt God more than he's already tempted him on the planet Earth, so he can't walk out. Then I'm behind them, and now I'm through the door, and I'm just kind of a nice human being, and I don't want to, like, go, oh, shit, and then turn around and walk out, because it's the asshole saying mass. And now I'm through the door, and Mike is behind me. And I hear from behind, I don't know if I said under my breath or said, oh shit. But I hear Mike behind me go, oh hell no, oh hell no. And he sucks his head through the tent, and then he turns around and he walks back, and nobody else comes through the tent. And so I sit there at Christmas Eve mass with one of the angriest human beings on the planet, right? Who needed not only to go to mass, but needed to go to confession about 15,000 times for all the bad things he's done. And then Bronzy, who was just sitting there, he almost levitated because he's so holy.
Bronzy never touches the ground, by the way.
He doesn't. He's a holy guy. You know, we were, for the first time I think I ever went to therapy, I called Luke and I called Bronzy and I said, hey, how do you deal with your black blood? And Luke, this is what Luke told me. These are like my close friends. I don't know why I didn't call Mike. Maybe I didn't have his cell number. But I call Luke and he goes, I can't really give you any advice. I said, why not? He said, I don't deal with it very well. I said, that's it? He said, that's it. I said, that's all you, I'm coming for you for advice and that's what you give me? He said, yep. I'm like, all right, man, you're a loser. Thanks. So then I called Bronzy, another buddy of mine, and Bronzy and I are battle buddies times two, Ramadi and Afghanistan. And so I said, hey, Bronzy, can I talk to you? And he's like, yeah, what's up? And I said, how do you deal with your black blood? And he said, I don't want to talk about it. And I said, come on. And he said, no, you'll get mad at me. I said, why would I get mad at you? He said, trust me, I know you. You'll get mad at me. I said, Bronzy, I'm asking you for advice, and you're not going to help me? And he said, Mac, I know you, and if I tell you, you're going to get mad at me. I said, look, Bronzy, I swear to God, I won't get mad at you. And he says, okay, the way I deal with my black blood? I said, yeah. And he said, God. I said, oh, shit, Bronzy. And so I start yelling at him, and he says, see, I told you so, I knew you were going to get mad at me, and now look at what you've done. And so this was the cast of characters that the pilot wanted the the godless, our godless F-18 pilot, Rudy, who never went to church with us at all. He said,
what was up with that? That's crazy.
Yeah, he seems like a well-reared human being, but yeah, he's just on his own, I guess. He wanted a pilot logbook to log his flight so he could get points for an air medal. No kidding. Okay, now, this is like...
Those are a chaplain.
That's like a transit. So for aviators, like, the air medal's sacred. Yeah, this is like...
Yep, I got one.
This is like... How did you get one for your combat sortie in the Harvest Hall?
Yeah, I don't really want to talk about it, but it's about my valorous, exceptional performance while in aerial combat with the enemy. There I was. I was coming out of the cloud bank, and we were about, 5,000 AGL, and we were taking fire from, looks like, my perspective, a 23-millimeter dual SPU of some sort. And due to my quick reflexes, I then told the pilot that we're taking fire, and then he made the course correction, which caused to save the lives of all 7 crew members.
Now, and then you continued to lobby for getting the hell out of there, yes?
Yeah, I kept getting closer to one of the 7 parachutes, because there was 9 of us in that plane, and I was going to get one of them no matter what. And I had told Kathy, who was the call sign of the pilot, because he talked too much. I said, Kathy, on the radio, I said, hey, why don't I just get my chute on now? Because, this is like a shift. You and, I forgot what his call sign, the co-pilot, you guys are going down with this thing anyway, right? Am I correct? That's the way it's supposed to be. So I'm just getting mine on now. And Major Blankenbecker, remember him? He's the F-18 guy.
Whatever.
Funny guy, man. He was the weapons officer in the back. He was howling on that thing. I'm like, hey, I'll just get suited up right now. Let me just make sure it fits me. And then I'll just stand by the door here in case anything goes wrong so I can get out of here. I'll tell the story, boys. I'll tell the story.
So that's one of Mike's stories of helplessness, right? Called combat helplessness. The other great one is his night.
Don't be in the boat.
Is night,
don't be in a boat.
The night,
don't be in the air.
The night on the Euphrates is another classic where the gunner is just a little bit too inquisitive for his own good, right?
Yeah. And then it's always, it turns out bad after, like, you're airborne or after you're floating down this river and you're shooting at everything and everything's shooting at, it's just like, what did I get myself into?
No,
but you kind of go back in your mind and go, what was I thinking that this was going to be like?
Yeah.
Not this.
You were like hanging out with the SEALs. You thought it was all going to be good, right? Yeah. And that's a total mistake. Because when you were coming back down that river and the tracers start flying and they start doing their 360s in the river, minigun going everywhere, what were you thinking? Like, Musselman, what an idiot, right?
Yeah.
That one clearly preventable. Hey, let's get on the boat. Let's get on the river. Let's go do some stuff.
I'll pass.
In retrospect.
But see, the plane one, though, I got sucked. I mean, we were up there doing some weapons testing for the missile system, and then that's when all shit broke loose on the radio, and we went up there. We weren't scheduled to be up there doing support. So.
Yeah, no, you can be forgiven for that one. I'm with you on that one. That was an accident. But tell everybody the best part of the whole thing is when you came through the clouds and you saw how close to ground.
I'm giving the pilots a hard time because they're like, everybody's calling for help. 3-5 has got like multiple ticks, troops in contact. I mean, it's a shitstorm up there that day. And you can hear it on the radio. I mean, it's just going on and on and on. So I'm up in the cockpit, and I'm like, man, that's 3-5. That's my boys up there. That's Dark Horse. We got to get up there, and we got to shoot some missiles for these guys. And they look at me and go, man, the weather's really bad up there, the cloud deck. I'm like, shit, that's
– come on,
don't worry about that.
Dark Horse.
We'll be good. Yeah, it's Dark Horse. So finally they get the order, go. So we're flying up. We push over the clouds, we're flying up north as fast as we can go. And then
Mike's all into it. He's got his dark horse on. Come on, let's go, boys.
Oh, yeah. I'm up on the cockpit. I'm, like, between the cockpit, the pilot, and the co-pilot. And then it starts getting serious. Okay, hey, we're going to start a descent into Sangin. So we're going through the clouds, going through the clouds, going through the clouds. And it's, like, taking forever. And all of a sudden, we pop out. And the freaking balloon, the aerostat, is above us. And I'm like, what the hell? First thing I said, whoa, why are we so close to the ground? This is not cool. And that's what Kathy and those guys are looking at me going, that's what we're trying to tell you, Gunner. The weather, you know, and I my mind wasn't thinking like a pilot between MSL and AGL.
Right.
You know, MSL's mean sea level, AGL, we're already at like 6,000 feet elevation. So when they're saying the cloud deck is at 9,000 feet, I'm thinking,
yeah,
9,000 feet. No, there's only, we're only like 3,000 feet off the deck, if that. Like 1,500 feet off the deck. You can see dudes on the back of mopeds driving around.
You could see, looking up at you.
You could lip read them.
Hey, that guy just said, let's go.
We're not a little quick jet. We're this fat four prop, big fat thing that just came out of the clouds. And then, like I said, the first thing that happened, man, we pop out of clouds. I look at everything. I'm like, holy shit, we're so close to the ground. And then on the headset, I hear this woman's voice. I've never heard this before. Say, deploying countermeasures. And there's bright lights and popping sound coming out of the side of the plane. And just like flares. And I'm looking at Cat again, like, what the hell is this? What's going on? And he goes, that's flares. And I said, flares for what? And he goes, a missile. And I'm like, oh, for crying out loud. Get me out of this plane. Get me out of this plane now. Because then their countermeasure is they pull back, not speed up, Mac. They pull back on the yoke and the power, you can feel the plane slow down. And then we're kind of like that falling feeling, like we're not flying anymore, we're more like falling. So there's me again going, and you know, and the whole time I got to tell you, man,
help
Kathy,
me,
the pilot,
help
and the other
me,
guy.
Help
yeah.
me, help me.
They were so cool because here's this ground guy and they're playing with them and I'm going, what the fuck are you guys doing now? Why are you taking the power out of this airplane? And they're like, cool, we want to make sure that, you know, their signature. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, well, why don't we just get the hell out of here?
Yeah.
Why don't you just push it forward? Hey, I got an idea. Go forward and then get out of here. Don't go back and slow down if a missile's coming at us, right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
And the whole time, that's what I'm politicking for our parachute. Hey, what do you guys think about? So who's number one parachute? Is there a number assigned? Are you guys form-fitted this? Can I take this one? Is this okay? Because I remember they had five parachutes up on the door. And the whole time. And then I put my visor down, my black visor, so they wouldn't see my eyes. Because I know those things had to be as big as saucers. And then I put oxygen back on. Why? Because I needed it. I was hyperventilating. I was like a freaking track star that just got done racing the 40-meter dash. I'm sitting there. Hey, I'm just going to put some oxygen on because, I don't know, maybe I got a cold or something coming on. I got this chest cold.
My God.
Oh, God, dude. Did you picture that? The whole time.
No, you came back and told the story. So he comes back, right? And he's all done with this thing. And he walks in. And we turn around and look. Like Luke is there. I'm there. And we're like, what happened? And he's like, oh, my God. Then he pulls out a chair.
6 hours.
He goes like, will you hear this? And we knew it was going to be a great story. And it was. It was hilarious. And we're like, oh, that's so funny. He's like, it wasn't funny though. It was terrifying. I almost passed out. Can you imagine 30 years in this organization and then I pass out in a C-130 because I'm afraid?
Yeah, I don't, man, I want control. That's why I said, I don't like flying. You don't have any control, you know?
I know, but you know what?
When you're on a boat,
you do those things
to
yourself. Yeah, you do those things. Those are your bad choices.
No, but
the C-130 was not a bad choice. I'll admit that. That was just happened. That was a coincidence.
Yeah. And then, like I said, well, then when I did the dust stop thing, and we got shot at with the dust stop guys, I'm like, God, my luck sucks when every time we go, when I get off the ground.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, you're the gunner. You got to live up to that name, right? That's a big...
Yeah. You got to get into danger.
Yeah, you got to mix it up. If you don't, then you can't be the gunner. You got to get another name.
But I see, but Mac, I used to joke, not, maybe the word joke, I'd be comfortable when I was getting shot at on the ground. It was comfortable. You're taking cover, bullets are flying over your head, they're impacting the berm above you, and you got a kind of a grin on your face. You know, like, what a bunch of dumbasses, they can't shoot.
Right? Marines are shooting, and Mike's looking at them going, what are you shooting at? They're like,
yeah, and I'm yelling at our Marines, like, what the hell are you shooting at? Well, I'm shooting at the enemy, sir. Where are they? Well, there's only like three of them, and there's 40 of us, and everybody's shooting.
Right? What are you
Everybody
shooting
sees the enemy?
No.
Well, no, I'm suppressing him. Stop suppressing him. Maybe he'll pop his head up, and then we can shoot him. And then be done with this.
That's not how it goes. Yeah. I'm shooting where that guy's tracers are going. Right?
So yeah, everybody shoots. And I remember seeing people shoot. They wouldn't even shoot in the right direction. They're like, what are you shooting at? I'm shooting at the enemy. Well, everybody else is shooting that way. Do you see anybody else over this way? Oh, no. People shoot just to shoot.
And
I think the more you've been involved in it, the more you get exposure to it, the calmer you get. So like I said, there were times that I didn't even shoot. I just lay down, and that's when I pulled out like my MRE snack, and I just lay there and just start eating. And people were looking at me like, why aren't you shooting? Well, because everybody else is. What good is my bullets going to do? I'm going to save mine, because if we run out, at least I'll have bullets.
And I'm hungry.
And I'm hungry, and I'm tired, and I don't want to clean my gun when I get back.
So it's all good over here, all right? Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Ugh, that is funny. Yeah, but, you know, I don't know about the whole Mother Teresa thing. I think you have to rethink that.
I'm not pushing to be Mother Teresa. I'm just pushing to be a nicer person. Nice guy.
Well, you've always been a nice guy.
I'm a great nice guy.
But
I don't want to be the... Yeah, I just...
You're not
it
that
takes
guy.
A lot
you're
more
not
now to piss me off.
You're not that guy, okay?
Yeah, I can be. I'm trying, Mac. Just trying.
Look, you're okay. We like you. You're funny. We like you when you're angry funny. We don't like nice funny. That's not funny. Who thinks that's funny? Nobody thinks that's funny. Angry funny, that's funny.
Yeah. I'll try it out. See what happens.
Trust me. Buck and Roger, they would split a gut if they saw you angry funny.
Oh, Buck already splits a gut every once in a while, so it's fun.
All right. What else you got going on today?
I'm probably going to go get a haircut.
You officially became
so cool,
you officially became retired man right now. I got to go get the newspaper, get a haircut, and get the dry cleaning. That's retired guy stuff.
Yeah. What's that say? Kurt knows. He wanted a pilot logbook. Oh, yeah, so he could get points for it. No kidding. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's like totally offended the air guy.
What a dick. What kind of plane? He was a nice guy to the right people. Are they talking to me?
Yeah, that is about
Montana
you.
Man. Oh.
Montana man.
That's nice.
Did you see the little shooting platform he built? That was pretty nice, huh?
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah,
so that old gunner picture, that was when we would travel and we weren't getting the proper care that we were supposed to, we deserved. I was in people's shit because I didn't like wasting my time. Okay, grab your gear. We're going to go sit outside. When are we leaving? 3 hours. No, we'll just sit in here. You come get us when the helicopter lands. Well, sir, that's the way we do it. I don't give a shit the way you do it. I just told you the way it's going to happen. Okay. That's good. I just didn't like stupidity.
Right.
And I guess the thing that now that I think right now, I don't run into a lot of stupidity. Maybe that's why. I'm calmer. I'm not running into stupid. Stupid isn't surrounded me.
It's not.
You know?
It's everywhere.
No.
Though.
I don't pull up on a range and, you know, hey, what are you guys doing? We're training. Okay, stupid, I get that. What are you training to? What standard?
What?
A good standard. A good standard. You idiot. Go get me somebody that's in charge. I am in charge. You're now relieved. Give me someone else. I had that happen one time. What standard are you training to? A good standard, sir. Oh, a good one. Oh, and here I thought you were going to say a bad one. I thought you were going to tell me, oh, so we're out here doing leave you guys alone. You don't need my help. You idiot. Give me somebody in charge. I am in charge, sir. And that's when it just stopped. Everybody's looking at me like, he's going to kill him. Gunner is going to kill the staff sergeant. A good, what are you training to? A good standard.
I
don't have that anymore, Mac. I don't have those problems.
You don't have that in you anymore?
Well, I don't run into it. I don't run into that kind of craziness, you know? And you know what I'm talking about? You literally, it takes you like 2 minutes to come back from that. Like, did he just say what I thought he said?
Yeah.
I mean, recruits on day one before they get their haircut don't say stupid stuff like that. They just repeat everything they hear. You actually had to have a brain to think of something so stupid. And then to say it to me. And then you got that no remorse, like, oh shit, I just said something stupid. You got the puzzled look like, I'm the stupid one. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Why is the gunner mad at me? I told him we're turning into a good standard. I don't run into that anymore, Mark.
So that's why you're
I'm
happy?
Calling the person. Yeah. Think about it. Yeah. And you know, Lance is retiring in July and in June.
Yeah.
And I wish Lance the best, but I couldn't come back for that because then I'd be around that again.
No, then you have to be accountable for your switched allegiance in football teams. And you know you have to pay for that at some point.
Yeah, I know. Then Lance would give me a hard time.
Yeah, you know, as well he should, man. You can't just like haul off that I quit. What?
Sure you can.
No,
you they can't. Quit on me a long time ago.
No.
They quit on me, and I held firm to my beliefs.
Stop it. Stop it.
I held out as long as I could.
It's your team. It's your team. It's your team.
Mac, loyalty goes both ways. If you're not loyal to me, I'm not going to be loyal to you.
They're loyal to you.
No, they weren't. They made bad decisions. They made bad, bad decisions without thinking of me and other fans.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yep, they're gone. Gone.
All right, so tell us, so other than getting a haircut today, anything else on the docket, on the schedule? That's it?
That's about it, man.
Wow.
That's about it, brother. I mean, I got some stuff I got to do around here. I gotta clean up the house a little bit.
The commandant is quoted.
Yeah, earn my keep.
The commandant is. Oh, you got some chores to do. Is quoted in Marine Corps Times as saying, that. Hold on. I think this is relative to the nude photo scandal.
Oh God, we're still on that.
Quote: I think this whole thing, as disturbing and as difficult as it has been, has actually been a benefit. General Nellis said during testimony at a defense subcommittee hearing for the Senate Appropriations Committee. I think it's been a benefit to our Corps because I think it's brought up a very simple point. It's really not about social media. It's about how we view women in our Corps. So we're having that discussion.
But he's the right guy at the helm right now, man. He's, you know, we've known him for a long time. He's the right guy to have in a situation like this.
Well, it's real interesting. I'll leave it at that because you got to go get a haircut. But we can talk about it maybe tomorrow. There's another interesting article about the reaction of parents whose their son died in boot camp. Former high school football player, Eagle Scout. And he had pneumonia, and he had been recycled for other physical issues. And so, but he was high school. I mean, it's not like, I mean, like there were things like, you know, ankle injuries and stuff like that, things that couldn't be, you know, he couldn't get through boot camp with. Well, then he had pneumonia, but he didn't tell anybody, and ultimately died in his sleep. And
wow, yeah. Is this recently?
Let's see. They just finished the investigation. The November 4th death of the high school football player. Yeah, so of 2016. And his parents are now kind of on a crusade to educate other parents and recruits that if you're sick, say something.
Because well, and it's hard. We can say that. You know, the environment, the pressure that's put on you, it's tough.
Right. He was he was supposed to go in November. He reported several weeks early when a slot opened in another class. He was sidelined after reporting soreness and swelling in his left leg in September during initial processing as a recruit. Doctors diagnosed him with a bacterial skin infection, cellulitis, administered. And that is a nightmare if you get that into your blood. So he got he got put in the training platoon because of that. Then he was supposed to join another unit. That got pushed back because of Hurricane Matthew. And then he, let's see, was able to join a new platoon of recruits in late October, about a month after arriving at Parris Island boot camp. So again, and then when he got sick, he didn't tell anybody. He failed on a timed 2-mile run, even though other recruits said he was a pretty good runner. He threw up at breakfast and asked other recruits not to tell anybody. And he was one of the larger recruits, 6'2", 228 pounds. Bottom line is that he had pneumonia, and he didn't tell any, of the drill instructors, and he died in his sleep.
Yeah, that is a shame, man. And like I've said before, and you've heard me say, is I can, there's some reasonable, thing that I can deal with when we lose guys in combat, because as we were doing something dangerous and we're losing, but when we lose them in training, we lose them in recruit training before they come and earn that title.
Right.
And, that to me is horrible. You know, like I said, we lose Marines, period, it's horrible. When we lose them in training, it's even worse. Yeah.
No, so their parents are trying to make the best out of it. So
that's good. It's good for them. I didn't want to hear like they're doing this anti-Marine Corps campaign.
Well, you know, in this case, you know, everybody did what they were supposed to do. The Marine Corps, you know, recycled him as necessary. You know, and but you know, sadly, his greatest enemy was his greatest strength, and that was his love of the Marine Corps, his desire to be a Marine. He didn't say things he should have said. Email question, and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
Mac, yesterday you were talking about how your guest handled Memorial Day. I'm curious how Mike handles Memorial Day. Does he kind of ignore it and treat it just as another weekend? Mike, so Memorial Day, what do you do?
It's a good question. Actually, what I do is I personally, privately reflect back on kind of the lives of the guys that I knew that are no longer with us, and kind of reaffirm that whole what they meant and what they did and what direction they changed my life, you know, from Megan McClung and, you know, everybody, you know, from hell, guys that I wasn't really good friends with, but I knew, like, you know, Kevin and Ed Smith, I was good friends with. And, you know, just, I go back and I look at it and I try to remember, you know, Benito Ramirez and Jason Morrow and, you know, and Plower and, you know, all those guys.
Right.
And think of what kind of people they were when they were alive, what kind of Marines they were, and what, you know, kind of what they would be doing today. And, you know, like I said, the problem is all the good ones went, you know, they were all good people.
and good Marines, good dads, good husbands, good human beings. And so you kind of, that's what I do. I personally reflect on each one of them, think about them, you know, and go back and kind of remember things that make me laugh, that we would laugh about or joke about, you know, that kind of thing.
There you have it. How the Gunner Does, yeah. How the Gunner Does Memorial Day. Now, everybody's different. A lot of guys, you know, just try to, you know, I mean, Memorial Day is a reminder for the rest of the nation. Right? Our tribe.
I mean, I'm reminded every day.
Yeah, our tribe tends not to need a reminder. We live it.
No. I'm reminded every day.
Right.
I really am.
Right.
I think about those guys all the time.
And it's all kinds of different stuff, from television programs to things that, you know, things you run across in your house and
music. Right. Songs that are played come up and you're kind of, you know, I remember the song comes up and I think of Jay Westland, you know, another song. Something comes up in the speech, and I think of Luke Scott, you know, and then, like, right. So it's a constant remembrance of, again, but I think the most important thing for me is what they meant to me and how I can be a better person from my interaction, my small time with them,
right.
And how did they influence me? And am I doing what they would expect me to be doing?
Right. No, and as you said, what you can, Montana Man does what you do. You know, but what you can take from them to make your life better. But, again, we as a tribe tend not to need a reminder because we...
Yeah, we don't need a day.
Do you go to public things, Mike?
No, I can't.
Right.
Cannot.
Right. No, it's...
It's just too... It's way too emotional for me. Right. I just can't. I can't do it.
No, I played a little bit of Eternal Father, and I didn't play Tap, but those songs, right? They give you chills because they're so filled with so many faces. And you know, I don't know why, but there was a Marine that was killed in Afghanistan that was, you were near him when he was killed, and it was I can't remember his name, but he got shot in the head as he was running, right?
Luke Scott.
Right, and
Lucas Scott.
2 inches either way, an inch, you know, an inch higher, and he's alive, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, and then the couple days before, an IED goes off. We're all laying down, and a piece of this IED goes flying straight up in the air, and it's his birthday. That day is his birthday. And, goes flying up in the air, comes back down, and cleavers his M16 in half, right at the receiver. Hits him in the top of the helmet, comes down, hits him in the lip or something like that, just cuts a little lip, but chopped his M16 in half. This piece of metal, this huge piece of metal. And we're laying right next to him, and we're just like, and then we're searching him for make sure there's no other wounds. He's in shock. Like, holy shit, I just can't believe this happened. And then we're kind of laughing afterwards, like, happy birthday. You know, you got another reason to celebrate your birthday because you just got another second chance of life. You know, and we talked about it. And then he went back to this FOB, and he didn't have to come back out. Right. He had some injuries. He didn't have to come back out. But he elected to because his buddies were there, and he didn't want to leave his buddies behind. And he came back out and was shot. And then he died that day, or sent a shot to the head.
Graduated from high school in 2009.
Yeah. I mean, he had been in the Marine Corps not even a year, I think.
Yeah, was killed on December 3rd, 2010.
Great, great kid. And, you know, and he's a testament of, he was great, raised by great parents, had a great mentor his whole life, his mother and his father, just a good kid. I learned, again, he taught me humble. Be humble. You know, and he was just a fun person to be around. Real quiet, reserved. But once you start got talking to him, you know, that country western or West Virginia drawl would come out in him, and he's just hilarious. But a young kid.
Right.
And, you know, doing what he's supposed to be doing. But, you know, again, didn't have to come out there after he got injured. But we don't teach this. You know, this is something that they pick up, and every Marine experiences, you can't leave each other behind.
Yeah.
There's no drill that we do that teaches you that. We tell you it, but you develop that. You kind of have an understanding for what that means. You don't want to have them to experience something without you there. You want to share danger. You want to be there. And Luke was that guy, and he did, and it cost him his life.
You can, I will tell you, his mother wrote something about him. If you search
Angie, Angie is his mother. Yeah.
Oh, this is written by somebody named Cindy.
That's his, I think, his sister.
Okay. The
but Angie's his mom. Angie Tipton is his mother.
If you do a search, you can go on Facebook. If you search Corporal Lucas Christopher Scott, you'll see it. Or if you could just search Luke Scott Marine Afghanistan, you'll find it, what they wrote about him. And wanted to be a Marine, used to dress up as a Marine when he was 7, to include painting his face. Rode his bike dressed like that in the town parade.
Yeah.
No, but you know what? And this is what I said this earlier about Ty Edwards. You know, I mean, those guys call Mike and I sir, if you can imagine what a humbling experience that is. Are you kidding me? I mean, what a joke, right? But in our in our tribe, those guys call us sir. It's the most humbling thing you ever seen. So, again. All right, man. You have a good day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
There you have it. The one and only Mother Teresa right here on All Marine Radio. More of that next. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They're a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted ranks. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted rank. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website at MarineCorpsMustang.org, or you can find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them there. Most importantly, join their association and help them continue the great work that they do. That's the Marine Corps Mustang Association. Join it today.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it. If you missed any part of the show, if I were you, I would just sit where you're at and listen to it again. First of all, the gunner was Chatty Cathy today. got accused of being a stolen valor guy. I love that stuff. You know, that happened to me once. Hey, what kind of uniform is that? You don't know? If you don't know, are you in the military? It was Marine Corps mess dress. They'd never seen it. You're a stolen valor guy, aren't you? Who are you? I'm gonna kill your ass. Anyway. My thanks to Lieutenant Colonel Ty Edwards, United States Marine Corps, for coming on today and spending a couple hours with us. Awesome. Awesome stuff. So, and hopefully we'll have his wife, Anna, on. Yeah, we'll get to the bottom of that. Anna running out to 29 Palms, dear boy. How funny. 29 Palms, could you imagine that? I can't wait to hear her talk about that. So we're driving. Anyway. No, Ty suffered a gunshot wound to the head in Afghanistan in 2008. And so you'll hear him talk about his career, what happened, what he remembers that day. And then living with a traumatic brain injury. You know? Again, great conversation. Yeah, he knows Montana Man, too. See, the Marine Corps is not that big of a place. That's what's cool about it. And anyway, my thanks to him for coming on today. And then we'll get Bob Nielsen on one of these days. He was going to join us, but we ran long. And then Chatty Cathy, Mike Musselman, joined us. I'll tell you this. Gunner can tell a story, too, in case you don't know. Hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. His story about being in the C-130 is funny. But, anyway. In fact, all my friends can tell stories. Montana Man, he can tell a story, too. Lucas does an impersonation of an Osprey that should be on Saturday Night Live. I kid you not. And it came out of nowhere in the middle of, like, one night someplace. All of a sudden, he starts... He puffed his cheeks out. Not sure why he did that. I think that somehow simulated engines, right? He gets his hands, his palms were flat to the deck, elbows at 90 degrees. Those were the engines of the Osprey, and he's rotating. He puts his shirt above his nose, then he starts doing some scene out of Red Dawn. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Hilarious. Yeah. It's not funnier than the guy I saw who lit his pubic hair on fire, but it's up there. Yeah. And then my thanks to Mike Musselman for coming on. Funny stuff. Anyway, have a great afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow. Kim Holmes, we'll do a little long weekend cooking stuff. So, I would just say, I say this relative to the Memorial Day weekend. at some point, and for most people listening either are veterans themselves or grew up in a family with a veteran in it. At some point, remind your friends, right, while they're saying grace or something. Teach your kids and your grandkids what this weekend's about. That this country didn't get to be what it is today without people caring about it. And that the life dream of a lot of young men and women who are in national cemeteries was not to be in a national cemetery. That wasn't their life dream. But they were willing to serve our great country. And so what does that mean to you? It means you owe. It means you owe to serve in your community. That's what it means. So Memorial Day is a time that we remember and I think recommit ourselves to this experiment of democracy in our nation. And the way you honor the people that have lost their lives, and it's not Veterans Day. It's not thank you for your service. And everybody, that's not what this weekend's about. It's about people who died for this country. So teach your kids about it, teach your grandkids about it, and admonish them. They owe to be involved in their community. They owe to make it better. That's what they owe. And if we all do that, then guess what? It gets better pretty quick. So my admonition to you, spread the word. It's what we have to do. We'll take another break. This program repeats itself. Don't touch that dial. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.